Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first podcast of Stop That or You'll Go Blind. I'm your host, Tony. I'll be joined in a few minutes by my co-host, Evan. This is episode numero uno, number one, so please forgive us for not the most pristine audio as we try to get some of the technical stuff worked out on the best way to record using FaceTime. But hopefully you'll get a chance to enjoy the podcast. Feel free to visit us at stopthator.com, where we have the podcast and our blog. You can follow us on Twitter, at stopthator. And by all means, please go to the iTunes page for the Stop That or You'll Go Blind podcast. Feel free to leave us comments, remarks, any good comments. Even if you don't like us, please just cut us some slack. We're just two guys trying to enjoy, hanging out, catch up. We don't talk that much. So give us a few episodes, and hopefully you will grow to like us if you're not on the bandwagon yet. But for now, enjoy, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Yeah, I'm here.
We are rolling. Just a second, there's a pre-roll. All right. Sorry, I had to go in and check on Lauren.
Oh, not a problem.
I had to go check in on the wife. She's making her pussy hat for the march tomorrow.
What the hell's a pussy hat?
It is, so for the Women's March on Washington...
Yeah,
it is a hat that it's a knit hat, a pink knit hat, and it's sort of a way to like an identity thing that women are wearing tomorrow for the march. That's kind of a solidarity thing.
Gotcha.
Kind of the modern burning of bras. She would be much better describing it. I feel like a hypocrite trying to give a good explanation of it. So. I'll stop now before I put my foot in my mouth. But it has a unique name that takes back the name in a sense of kind of empowers.
Okay.
After during the campaign season, how that was used inappropriately, we'll say.
Yeah.
Anyways, hey man, we're rolling.
Oh, right.
So yeah, this is number one. Cuckoo Kajoo.
Cuckoo Kajoo, indeed.
How's it going, man?
It's going all right. You know, I'm living the life of a 41-year-old college student, an intern. Can't complain.
I'm living the life of a 43-year-old identity lost in the wilderness kind of advocate who feels like a fish out of water right now in D.C. So,
yeah,
it's the age of soul searching for 40-year-olds.
That it is. I thought that being I was on campus today, and I thought, well, okay, it's inauguration day. There's bound to be a lot of protests, a lot of action going on. You know, very liberal campus. It was like subdued. It was as if everybody had a friend who just died, and it was just one big. It was just one. It was as we say in Judaism. It was one big shiva. I mean. That was kind of the mood on campus today,
but yeah.
No, but there was no one really like, you know, there were no protests. There were no people, you know, outside crying or anything like that. So, you know, hey, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
But very, very somber mood. But I know that my aunt and uncle, Ted and Andrea, they're going to the march tomorrow in D.C., either in D.C. or New York. And we have some friends out here in Colorado that are going to the, to the march in downtown Denver. So,
oh wow, that's cool. I didn't realize they were doing so many marches around the country in other cities.
Yeah, no, there's gonna be marches in definitely Denver. I'm pretty sure New York. DC will be the mammoth one.
Yeah,
and I'm tempted to say LA, but yeah, it's gonna be you're gonna see tons of protests going on tomorrow. It was. Less subdued. There really wasn't that much going on protest wise in DC. I mean, you had some rioters, not rioters, but protesters that got a little out of hand. But really, I thought you'd see a sea of, you know, signs and things like that saying "Not my president." But I watched a little bit of it on TV, and you know, it was his crowd.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was definitely. You could tell. Like I get on the train. From a shuttle from my office down in Virginia where I work, And to get back to Maryland, I have to take a train and or a shuttle to the train. And where I got it on the train, there were, you know, yesterday we were closed today. We're just teleworking today because it's travel's just been, you know, there's so much gridlock. So pretty much everybody that was working today was teleworking. But it was, you could definitely tell that there was a different crowd in for, you know, in town. It reminds me of when usually like in April and May, it's when all like the high schools come here.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of people that are just, you know, kind of coming to Washington, D.C. in that sense of like Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of vibe. Like, you know, people are sort of, I guess you lose track of it when you live here. But, you know, people are sort of always have this kind of awe when they come to Washington for the first time. And so there were a lot of people just kind of trying to find their way around getting on the subway station. That's probably one of the busier subway stations for tourists to get dropped off by buses and stuff. So it's definitely.
Yeah. I think as I've gotten older, I just I don't want to be with crowds. I couldn't, you know, it doesn't even matter who was inaugurated today. I can't imagine wanting to be in that huge crowd all bunched together. I'd so much rather watch it on TV or even listen to it on the radio on NPR or something like that. Just not in the crowds anymore. And I think that has something to do with age. But I also think it has to do with being a dad and having a kid, in that, you know, pushing a stroller and lugging all the baby stuff, you know, in a big crowd just was never fun.
No, I know. It was nice when we could do, like we did, John Stewart had this thing on the mall like several years ago.
Yeah.
Oliver, before my second was born, but when my first was still like one. So we were able to put him in the carrier and take him down. He wasn't even one yet, actually. He was like 10 months, I guess. Wow. And so we took him down to the mall, and it was great because you could just carry him around like a backpack on front of you. But then once we started using the stroller, it was hard just to navigate any special events or anything like that. And it's going to be interesting tomorrow. We're taking both boys down tomorrow for the march. So we're gonna. I know I'm gonna carry Elliot probably on my shoulders the whole time. So
yeah,
but we'll see.
Yeah, I have the TV on in the background, and I'm watching MSNBC, and they're at one of the inaugural balls, and Melania Trump just has this look on her face, like, how the hell did I get here? Like, how did I went from dating the guy to marrying the guy, and now I'm First Lady of the United States. Like, she just has this, I feel sorry for her. It's like, I don't think she like signed on for this.
It'll be interesting, because Michelle Obama said it was such a huge change, and, you know, people were like, run in 2020. And, you know, I get this sense that she's like, no, like she's been, you know, she's seen the grit of the spotlight, and I can't imagine anybody wanting to enter into that. I mean, it's almost like an experiment, like to think that you're behind this iron cage that surrounds your house for 4 or 8 years. And I don't know who would want that kind of spotlight on you all the time.
I will
like Truman Show.
Yeah, well, I will say it right here and now that I think Chelsea Clinton is gonna go make a run for it in a bunch of years from now.
Okay.
she is gonna come back and basically
reclaim.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're gonna see Chelsea Clinton in a bunch of years. Until then, who knows.
Oh, we still have some Kennedys lingering around Congress and D.C., so.
Yeah, well, Carolyn Kennedy, she's pretty popular. They loved her in Japan. And I would think that, you know, Elizabeth Warren, maybe they'll, you know, urge her to run as well. But I don't know. I think it's, what did you think of the media coverage of the whole campaign?
The whole campaign?
Yeah, just you know, the whole.
I don't know. I found myself not going to evening news like I used to. I just kind of got tired of the attention on stuff that wasn't substantive. You know, it just really, and maybe it's just because my life now has formed into this life as an advocate, where it's like everything is issue oriented, and you know, I bury myself in policy and all this stuff. But I don't know. It just seems very. It just wasn't the news that I was wanting to hear.
Yeah.
you know, I thought there was way too much talk about emails, and stuff that I just didn't think, like, what does this have to do with leading a country? And I know people are going to say, like, you know, well, it does have something to do because it shows responsibility and she should have done this and that. And, you know, just, you know, listening to other people, not taking good advice and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just, it, you know, I felt like it was just, I was just done with it. But then too, we've had this election campaign going on for years, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like, it seems like it's as easy as it is to kind of vote now, because we did early voting. We voted a couple weeks early, you know, and it seems like the old days where a candidate would have to go all the way around the country in like a horse and buggy or a train, I could understand why you would maybe take a whole year to campaign. But now, yeah, I feel like, you know, they could come out in like August before the election and just start campaigning. And then I feel like I could confidently choose who I want to be my, yeah, president. You know, why does it have to be 2 years of campaigning? I feel like they're even getting ready now to start running in 2020. And I'm just like, why? Just let it go. Let's breathe.
Oh, I think they're definitely getting ready now and getting all set up for 2020. I think I'm more interested in the congressional races in 2 years. After the election, I could not believe the look on the faces of a lot of the anchors and newscasters and journalists as they were trying to explain how he won the Electoral College. I mean, everyone had this look of shock on their face. And I just stopped watching news from that point on. I would watch network news a little bit, but I couldn't watch the 24/7 anymore. Well, and I actually found that my mood actually brightened when I stopped watching the 24/7 news.
Yeah.
And just walked away from it for a while. I mean, for news, all I was doing and what I still do is NPR on the drive to work and on the drive home from campus. And I have the AP wire on my phone, and that's what I've been doing. And I got to tell you, it made a difference. I wasn't as, like, all doom and gloom like I've seen a lot of people get.
I have started using my Apple News app a lot. I never really used it until probably just before the election, where it was just like – it was kind of like, okay, here's top line. And it was pretty – you know, it's Washington Post, it's Wall Street Journal, it's New York Times, it's – you know, I can get the stuff I like New Yorker and things like that. And like, but you know, like Chicago Tribune and some newspapers that are pretty middle of the road op-ed, you know, I've even seen, yeah, stuff from coming up in my feed from Washington Times, which is kind of the conservative newspaper. So, I mean, it's a pretty balanced, you know, dossier or whatever you want to call it that they yeah, send you. So I've enjoyed that. Cause yeah, I agree that I feel like the news has become the weather person, the weatherman, you know, for, because they were going into it saying 98% assurance that Hillary Clinton's going to win, and they were totally, mm-hmm, wrong, like just totally. So yeah, it's like I compare the news now to just, it's like a 24-hour weather report where they're probably not going to get it right. They're going to say it's not going to rain and I'm going to get soaked, or the other way around. Well, or like it'll snow.
Yeah. But the thing also is that I remember watching. I was watching a lot of Chuck Todd on MSNBC, and he had on all the folks from the Trump campaign, especially Kellyanne Conway and one or two other folks. And these people, and they would go on air and start citing these polls that had Trump up by this many points, and Chuck Todd would just come right back at him. That's not a scientific poll. That poll doesn't count. And those, yeah, were all the polls that essentially were right. I mean, you know, Chuck Todd had the other, you know, and I'm kind of becoming a Chuck Todd fan in that on the night of the election, after he had won the Electoral College, I think it was Chuck Todd who said, look, you know what? The best we can hope for right now is that the weight of responsibility, the weight of the office will change him. And if you heard that campaign speech, that inaugural speech today, that hasn't happened.
I guess we should give a precursor that both you and I are you obviously much more than me, because my tenure was very short-lived, are burned out journalists.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are civilians now.
Yes, we are civilians now. We have escaped the monster. My monster transformed into journalism that ended up being 7 years in monasteries. You went the other way and went, how many years with the big one?
I was with CNN for 7 years on the first run, so from 98 to 2005. And then I went back to CNN from 2011 to 13, so 9 years.
Nine years altogether.
Yeah. But so those last two years I was doing financial news, and that doesn't count.
No, but it's important though. I mean, you were definitely in the epicenter when you were in New York City. That was like the epicenter of news though. I mean, just yeah, in a sense of, you know, the economy was coming back, you know, we'd gotten past the recession. And so I think finance news is probably going to be, if anything, I'm going to be watching toward now in the news cycle, it's going to be what's happening to the markets and what's happening to the economy. Right. But partly too, because I'm a dad now and I worry about my kids' future in the sense of, how are these accounts I'm throwing money into each month going to actually help my kid get to college someday if he can afford it?
Well, speaking of New York, this is one of the few things you and I actually disagree with. I am not a New York fan. That whole experience of working in New York, and I worked at the NASDAQ studio, which is right in Times Square. So maybe it was the fact that I was just in Times Square every day, but I cannot understand why anybody would want to live in New York City. It's a fun city. It's got more to do than you know, 50,000 Disney Worlds combined, but it is just such a claustrophobic mess.
I would think of it as riding the Coney Island Cyclone while taking an 8-ball. Not that I've ever done an 8-ball, but just the sense of sensory overload if I had to work there every day.
Yeah.
I hardly ever went to Times Square when we lived there. I mean, we always pretty much hung out below 14th Street, as they'd say.
Well, and I'm the only person, and people cannot believe it when I tell them this, but I spent 2 years working in New York. CNN at Time Warner is right across the street from Central Park. I have never been to Central Park in my life. Of all the times that I was at the Time Warner building right across the street from Trump Tower and Central Park, I never went into Central Park. That's how burnt out on the city I got. And I will tell you this. I give New York all the credit in the world. The way that city bounced back after 9/11, you have to stand and salute that city without a doubt. But I'm just not a New York guy otherwise.
No, you guys got a good gig now in Denver. I think that's pretty safe to say.
And hey, so you mentioned you and I were supposed to come up with our favorite protest songs.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me give a caveat for that, because I'm working on a blog post right now about songs in general. And one of the things I was thinking about, because our band is trying to get back together. I'm in this little, like, Tacoma Park folk bluegrass whatever kind of group, and we were saying the other day that I think now we just need to learn a whole set of protest songs and we can probably get a good gig pretty much anywhere in town now. But the problem is I can't think of any good recent protest songs.
Can you? The four selections on my list are not recent.
No.
I don't know anything about current day music. I don't.
I try to stay in tune, but it seems like there's not. I mean, there's good music out there, I'm sure, and there's good protest songs, but they're all probably like underground in a sense, nothing mainstream. Like when you think of the '60s, because I was coming up with a list. Like, you know, one of the things, you know, we were thinking about, you know, what are the top protest songs? Because I don't know, I just feel like I need a good playlist right now to get me in the mood and give me a little more cause as I pause each day.
Well, I guess I'm just not interested in listening to Justin Bieber bitch about things. So I can't get into the modern day music.
See, that's why that's like my reason for building a wall along Canada is just to keep him out and like other
people. Yeah,
him and Bryan Adams. Well, I did have Cut Like a Knife, the album, come up on a random Pandora a few weeks ago, and it was pretty badass.
Well, Canada did give us Rush, so they got with something right.
There's been a Gordon Lightfoot. Was he from Canada? The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Do you remember that song? It's like 8 hours long.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know if he, yeah. I don't know if he was from Canada or not. All right. Well, can
what's your four? Yeah. What's songs? The four? Yeah. Give me the four, man.
All right. So, number four on the list, and I'm a diehard Pink Floyd fan, but I really think that Hey You has got to be a great song to listen to on a day like this. So that's my Pink Floyd reference. Mm-hmm. Hey You, number four. Number three, Give Me Some Truth by John Lennon. Not that it's a song that you would sing at a protest, but just the way he took on the Vietnam War and Nixon and everything like that in that song. Yeah. I got to say, Give Me Some Truth is at number three. Number two is, this is a tough one, but number two is Land of Confusion by Genesis.
I used to love that video.
Yeah.
It had like the Thatcher puppets in it and like kind of, it was like that whole, like, we're going to blow the world up kind of time. Wow.
Oh, Superman, where are you now when everything's going wrong? So somehow. Yeah. Land of Confusion is number two. And the number one song for any protest or any revolution, it's got to be Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who. Got to be.
Good song.
Yep.
Man, that gets my blood pumping.
Yep.
Something about Keith Moon as a drummer just like makes you want
to. The thing is that like move. when I decided to, yeah, that's my number one song, I decided just to look up the song on this songfacts .com site that tells you the backstory on every song. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't misreading the lyrics. And sure enough, I didn't really know this about the song, man. I knew it was about, you know, the consequences of revolution, but that the whole like opening part of that song is, you know, the revolution happening. Then the middle part is the new leadership being, you know, elected. And then the end of it where Daltrey, you know, screams is, you know, where it's all falling apart again. That's just a classic, great song.
That is, man. So mine are loosely put together here. I mean, I'm trying to think if I can get them in a quick order. I'll do four. So probably number four, the Doobie Brothers, Taking It to the Street. I remember watching that on good. Do you remember? Was I think that was on What's Happening? Do you remember the show What's Happening?
Yeah, with
that I remember was they the like rerun. Yeah, with rerun and like rerun did this whole thing about like he was bootlegging the show. Like somebody had him carry around this big like a physical tape recorder like in his giant coat and like it. He got dancing too hard and then it fell out and the band stopped and it was like this moment of reckoning with rerun.
That's good.
Should be the name of my new band, Reckoning with Rerun. But that just in general, I just pop that on sometimes on the train. It just makes me feel good, kind of in a sense of, you know, kind of reminding you like, oh, this is what we need to do.
Yeah.
There is a song, a very obscure song by Chicago called Dialogue One or Dialogue Part One.
And I've never heard that.
It might be on the same album. I get so confused with Chicago because all their albums are numbers, and it just confuses me to no end about what's on which album. Because I'm always like, was that on one or five? It might be on the same album as Saturday in the Park, but it might not. I'll have to put it in some show notes and figure it out which one's that
you
on.
You don't usually think of Chicago and protest together.
Yeah, but they're old stuff. Like, not like when he's, like, on that Ferrari or whatever that fancy car was and what, Stay the Night. Not that one, but, like, the old Chicago. It's these two guys basically, like, sound like they're college students, just kind of one's talking to the other. They're having a conversation. It sounds like something you would hear someone write an essay on after reading Plato's Republic in college. But
so it was, like, before Peter Cetera got mainstream.
Exactly. It was kind of like when, you know, I would put it up there with, you know, like when – you know, what's his name? Peter Gabriel was still in Genesis. You know, it's like that stage of equal Genesis to Chicago ratio of their sort of early stages when they still sort of had a bite. And I think it was after they actually left Chicago, ironically. But anyways, but yeah, so Dialogue Part One is a great, I'll put a link up to it. It's really good. Just because, I don't know, it's two people and one person's like, hey, I don't really think there's anything going on really in the world. And the other person's like, how can you live with so much going on right now? And so that one's there. The other, I don't know if it's, it just gets me in a mood, but I don't know if it's a technical protest song, but give me Shelter by the Stones.
Yeah.
There's something about it that just makes me want to get up and move. So it's definitely on my playlist for when I'm kind of down and out, but I'm needing to like go speak somewhere, or go like, you know, like off to go like charge a group up somewhere. So that's a really good song.
I don't know the backstory on that song, but if any Rolling Stone song is going to be protest oriented, I'd have to believe it's Give Me Some Shelter.
It feels like it. I remember seeing it in like Vietnam documentaries when I was a kid. They'd always play that song.
Yeah.
Which actually goes to the next one, which is the Buffalo Springfield song. The stop. Oh. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going round. That's a good one. Again, all these songs are from the 60s. This is the problem. I have nothing new.
Yeah. Except, I mean, at least with Genesis, I brought it into the 80s a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the number one, though, my number one is, and this is probably going to, I don't know, some people will be like, really? But
We Are the World.
Yes, exactly. We Are the World is hands down the greatest protest song ever. If you like Kumbaya a lot. Actually, that was all right, even though I didn't like Cyndi Lauper that much. I like Cyndi Lauper, but she was oddly placed in that mix. But no, Billy Bragg. Have you ever heard Billy Bragg?
Wilco.
Yeah, he did the Wilco thing. That was one of his projects. Yeah, that was really good. But he has a song called Accident Waiting to Happen. And it talks a lot about fascism and just sort of the change in the 80s, early 90s in England, sort of Thatcher, just after Thatcher. And so it's my go-to song for some reason. I just really like Billy Bragg.
You went totally like, you know, artsy, obscure. And I couldn't have gone any more mainstream. Pink Floyd, Genesis, John Lennon, The Who. I mean, you actually went like, you went for some that like, people don't think about it every day.
Well, yeah, but I think, I don't know. I mean, I could, if we were to do top 10, John Lennon definitely in there. I'm trying to think of my favorite John Lennon. All We Are Saying, the Give Peace a Chance with the Yoko.
You had this, yep. Imagine would be too easy. I couldn't do Imagine because I was like, that's going to be on everybody's.
Yeah, they play that. We've started going to this Universalist church, Unitarian, and they play the first time we were there. They played Imagine as like the sanctuary music, and I was like, I kind of dig this church. It's like they're playing John Lennon, but it is kind of
You know, Imagine's going to be on everyone's list, and I was surprised that you didn't have Won't Get Fooled Again on your list. I thought. Even as I was making notes myself today, I was like, "Yeah, Tony's going to have this one."
Well, I think Teenage Wasteland would definitely be on my list from The Who.
Yeah,
that and Joined Together with the Band. I used to play that a lot. That was fun. That would just kind of get me amped up. Like that would be a good like pre-demonstration song.
Well, then since you're a musician, what is the best protest song to play?
Like on a guitar?
Oh. On any instrument. Like no, but as part of a band. Rock band.
Probably Teenage Wasteland, that's a fun song. Like that just makes you want to jump and throw your head around. Like if I would just had my guitar, I totally left out Dylan. Like the times they were changing. You did. Rolling Stone. Hendrix has a great version of like a Rolling Stone from it. It might be his Monterey Pop Festival or maybe live his Winterland live concert. But he does a great cover of like a Rolling Stone. But
was surprised you didn't come down on me for having the Land of Confusion Genesis on there because you're the one who got me into Genesis with you know the Peter Gabriel years Genesis.
Oh, like Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Yeah.
Broadway, Selling England by the Pound. Those are albums I bought after I heard you listening to them. I was like, all right, well, if Tony's listening to them, I'll give them a shot. And I really didn't know what kind of like artsy mind meld I was getting into with those albums, but they're great albums. I love I love Genesis, the Peter Gabriel years.
Yeah, but those weren't like his protest years. Those were his art years.
Yeah.
Like, I think he became a protest songwriter when he left them. Like, what is the song? This Time We've Come Too Far?
Right.
That's a good song. That'd be a good protest song.
Sting has a couple protest songs, too, I think. His are more kind of mainstream. I can't.
He definitely... Early Police had an edge to it. Punk, that kind of punk vibe, like, get out of our face.
Well, the best was... the best. I mean, speaking of music, the best is that, like, you know, the Trump folks had, like, a horrible time trying to book musical acts for all the inaugural stuff. And so they eventually they got this band called Three Doors Down, which I couldn't even name one of their songs. And
I think they're from Mississippi.
Yeah. And then a runner up from America's Got Talent. But you know, if you're a starting musician and you get that kind of offer, it's like, how do you say no to that? Like, all right, for a couple hours, we'll just pretend we're playing in front of, you know, Madison Square Garden or something.
I feel kind of bad for the people that, you know, I mean, I get the Trump voters. I mean, you know, I lived in Michigan for a while. I lived in Chicago for a while. Like, I totally get where people are coming from in a sense of just angry and everyone's been sticking it to them, you know, so, you know, they heard something that they wanted to hear. They projected themselves up on it and they voted. Like, I can kind of get that. Like, yeah. It's not me, but I can understand how it happened. You know, like, I remember Michael Moore had this video a couple weeks before the election and he pretty much nailed it when he described that segment of culture in America that ended up being the ones that voted for him. And part of me wonder what it's like for, like, people, you know, there's people here that are good people that came in for the inauguration, you know, that came long distances. And, we'll go back to news in just a second about news, that there is a news show. I do like watching now, but you know, I feel kind of sad for people that came here and thinking this is the best we could get. Like, you know, like, it just feels like you're already, you voted for Trump because you felt like America was kind of stepping on you and leaving you at the side of the road, you know, like, where's my America, you know, in your own worldview. And then you come here and you're like, this is, I get Lee Greenwood singing a song that was big 30 years ago. And Toby Keith. I don't even know a Toby Keith song. Anyways, part of me feels kind of bad though. Like, thinking, like, you came this, you know, people, there's a campground near where our house is in College Park. And so people will get on a bus and then take the bus. And it's the same bus that goes to my block. And then we go down to the metro. And they're always from, like, you know, Oklahoma or, you know, somewhere in the plains in the Midwest. And they're, you know, bringing their RVs and setting up and going to see Washington. And they get on the bus to go see the monuments. And so there were a lot of people on the train the other day. And, you know, these people travel a long way. And I just felt kind of bad for them. Like, this is like, I'm you know, they're, when you look at what there was in 2009 and 2013, those were some impressive concerts up on the Capitol.
Yeah.
And they're down on the, around the inaugural balls and stuff, like, you know, REM, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
And now it's just, I don't know, but hey, oh, going back to the news though, cause we're talking about news. What news are we keyed into now?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have HBO or not, but have you heard of Vice?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
It's really good. Like, it's very interesting news that I'd love to sit in on one of their editorial meetings in the morning and figure out just how they determine. I'll have to try to find some clips and send you some links to them, or maybe I'll put a link up. So Vice, it's hardly anybody talking. There's no spoken person standing up, doing a stand up. It's a lot of just interviews that are laid out in a way that's, you know, it's just very concise. It gives you a worldview sometimes, like how the BBC does, you know, where, like, I'll listen to the BBC podcast in the morning, the World News, World Service. And I'm like, oh, this is nice to know what's going on in Turkey right now and in Ethiopia and not just know that, you know, what someone said here in the States that is, why is this making news? Why is Kanye West making so much news in the States when there's real news around the world? But the Vice, yeah, they have, they just, whoever their editorial team is, just really top notch. So I have been vibing toward that. But they had a really interesting story where they got on a bus that came from maybe Tennessee and followed people coming up here to the inauguration. And it was interesting. You really kind of got to see into their lives.
Wait, it's an actual news show?
It's a 30 minute news show. And it comes on every night on HBO. And it's really good. It's really good. So it's like straight up news, but it's shot in a way that is kind of intimate.
Yeah.
And very personal. And the way they do their cuts and edits and segues is very kind of millennial, I guess would be a way to describe it, in the sense that it's very, the way it's cut is, it feels almost like maybe like it's, you know, a social app or something like that on your phone, but it's straight up hard news. And they'll have a VO, sometimes a guy that does voiceover that segues or puts context on things.
Yeah.
But you really kind of experience in sort of that citizen journalist sort of method. In fact, yeah. I'm wondering if it maybe they have a ties, because sometimes it seems like the people reporting or you do shooting the footage are like college students almost. So I wonder if it's like maybe what was it they used to do at Grady at University of Georgia, the News Source, whatever it was.
News Source 15.
Yeah, News Source. You know, it sort of has that feel.
Okay.
Like journalism students putting together feeds. But yeah, it's really good. It's really good. So I would If you go to a hotel, indulge in HBO for your nightly news segment.
I never thought that I would be an NPR listener, but maybe it was 2 years ago. We had satellite radio in our car, and I couldn't justify having it anymore more than $9 a month because my commute is practically nothing.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, you know what? We're gonna save $9 a month, and we got rid of it. And then I can't listen to commercial radio because I just, you know, the commercials. So if I'm listening to music, I'll usually be listening off of my phone or a CD or whatever. But I started listening to NPR. For the past 2 years, I've really gotten into NPR. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, they use minimal production value with their stuff. I mean, it's, with the exception of some jazz music as an intro and outro, I mean, for the most part, you know, it's just the bare bones story, which I really appreciate. I don't know if that's me just getting older or I don't know what, but I remember I was driving home the other day and I was listening to a story about evaporation. And like 15 minutes later, I'm like, wait, I was just listening to a story about evaporation for the past 10 minutes. I mean, that's just NPR. But yeah, I've become a real big NPR fan. I never used to listen to NPR when I worked in news. Never listened to it.
Was it because they were the competitors, like, or was it just
no?
Were they as we are now? North. Well, now you're a mile high elitist. Northeast. Those of us Northeast Coast elitist snobs.
No. I used to think that. I used to think that people who said, "Oh, I just listen to BBC News and NPR." I used to think, okay. I used to think that, yeah, it was that kind of snobbish type of thing, but I think the reason why I never listened to NPR when I worked in news is because all the stuff I was doing in news had a lot of production value to it, had a lot of that dramatic music that we put over video of some explosion or something, and we would do black and white video, and we would strobe it, and we'd have this dramatic music and maybe a heartbeat type sound. And
yeah.
I just had gotten so accustomed and so used to that production value that to go from that to listening to NPR was like crashing into a brick wall. And now I kind of, I'm very much against that kind of production value where I want to let the pictures and the images say what they need to say. You know, do you really have to put production value in dramatic effect on footage of 9/11 or something? It's like, no, just leave the footage as it is, and you know, just let your audience come to their own or conjure up their own emotions, something like that. But yeah, that's why I never used to listen to NPR, and that's why now it's really just the breath of fresh air with the exception of that jazz music they play at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like, here's the story. You know, decide for yourself how you're going to feel.
I like the Vice news as far as a visual medium for that is a lot like that. I didn't think about it, but in some ways, I feel like maybe what this Vice news is kind of like a, because NPR has been sort of changing their news style for a couple of shows too, like some new programming the past few years. And
yeah,
they have Diane Reem left. They have this new guy, 1A, whatever it's called. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, no, you know you've become an NPR fan when you're listening to a 10-minute story on evaporation. Yeah, that pretty much seals the deal.
Well, I can listen to a whole hour-long podcast of like stuff you should know on saccharin the other day.
Saccharin.
It was fascinating.
that's the thing with NPR. It's like you can listen to a story about saccharin, yeah, follow it up with evaporation, and there's your Friday night.
I know. It's nice. Just cuddle up with some headphones under the blanket.
I had to make a decision. I'm either going to listen to the Frozen soundtrack or I'm going to listen to NPR and NPR One.
Hey, have you guys seen this Moana movie? Moana? Is that?
No.
Yeah, Moana?
No. The last movie we haven't – the last movie we took her to see was this movie called Sing.
Did that one with the boys.
That movie was good. Yeah.
Who was the voice? Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
I love this. This is going up in a couple of days, and it's like a month old, 2 months. Moana is like 2 months old. I need to find something more modern to talk about. There's no movies that are out right now. I wanted to take the boys to a movie this weekend, and there's nothing really out right now. Where post Christmas is brutal time for good kids entertainment.
Well, you really can't even. Even Star Wars is a little too violent these days.
Yeah. Although Rogue One is pretty. I have to admit, Rogue One with the blind Jedi as a blind man, I thought that was pretty badass.
When they put the cover over his head, he's like, "Really? I'm blind." They took all these people, they captured all these people, and they're like binding their hands, and they put this hood over the blind guy. He's like, "Really? I'm blind."
Yeah.
No, that was funny. No, my little girl, she's 4.5, and I'm in kind of my revolt against Disney at times. I have to let her watch some of the movies that, you know, I think are classics. So I've been picking movies, you know, that I think I can explain to her, and so she's become a big fan of Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters.
Oh, sweet.
She loves that movie.
Have you guys watched the new one?
Yeah. Well, I bought – I was at Best Buy and they had it on sale for $9.99, and I thought it can't be that bad. So I bought it and I couldn't get through it. It was it makes Phantom Menace look like Out of Africa. This movie was so bad. I could not get into it. If anybody wants my copy, I'll give it to you. I'll send it to you. But it was horrible. No,
for Maddie's sake, though, it does kind of have a girl power vibe to it.
Yeah, no, forget it. Not that movie. No, she's watched Ghostbusters. She's watched Three Amigos.
That's a good one.
The original Star Wars, although she likes Return of the Jedi because of the Ewoks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think she caught me watching The Simpsons the other day. And she got really into it. And then I was like, nah, I can't let my daughter watch The Simpsons. And I turned it off. And then she said, no, I want to watch The Cinnamons. And I'm like, no, it's The Simpsons.
At least it wasn't like Family Guy or South Park or something.
No. And the only show on MTV that I ever even watch is this show called Ridiculousness. And it's like the worst show just ever. It's just, you know, a show – a half-hour show with just like back-to-back YouTube clips of people getting kicked in the crotch and throwing up and stuff. And what can I say? That's where my head's at these days.
We stumbled on America's Funniest Home Videos on Roku one night. We cut the cable, we cut the cord, so we just do Roku now. And it was the boys. I've never seen people laugh harder. Like, they thought it was the most brilliant, hilarious, like, just slapstick humor was, like, the funniest thing to them. It was such
was
a weird...
Was this the Bob Saget years?
Yeah, it was the Bob Saget reruns. Okay. But, you know, it was just, I don't know why, but they just thought it was hilarious. And it makes you as a parent, because you're sitting there going, I'll never watch this in my life. This is the worst thing. This is the downfall of society, shows like this. But then when you see your kids laugh that hard, you just start laughing with them. You're like, this is so... They are so funny right now at this thing that it's making me laugh. It's like the contagiousness of Bob
Saget.
It's like
Saget. You don't know what you're laughing at. You're either laughing at Bob Saget, which is like horrible, or you're laughing with your kids. I think you're laughing with your kids.
Not that Bob Saget is horrible, but it's a quality of entertainment that's when I feel like I'm an elitist. Although now I watch it with my kids and I'm like, oh.
You know, I have another friend, a buddy of mine here, who he cut the cord as well. Mm-hmm. No cable. And I forgot how he's getting, it's not the Amazon thing. It's something where you plug it into your TV.
Like a Chromecast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Google,
something like that.
Like the Google version or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But, we still have Comcast cable. We have like just the basic package. And I'm thinking that probably give Lane and I another year and then we'll be done with cable, I think. I think we'll be done.
There's a thing called Sling that I remember.
That's it. That's what he has.
Yeah. Sling. And I tried using it, but unfortunately it wasn't accessible for the software I use for being blind. But it's basically like $20 or something. And you get like a lot of channels. And then you realize I really don't need 500 channels. I can get by with 10 pretty well. You know, you get like two kids channels and like AMC, which we were big Talking Dead fans, but we've kind of burned out on that.
But what do you do if you want to just watch news? Like what if you wanted to watch?
I think it can pull your news channels too. I think it can pull your news, like a local news affiliate. We do have a crappy, whatever the new version of the digital type antenna rabbit ears. Now it's like this flat piece of floppy something you stick to the wall and it's supposed to be an HD antenna, but it sucks. It's the signal I get with HD is so much worse than the analog terrestrial days of television. But you know, we get PBS kids, so that's all we need.
Yeah. It's that thing that you throw up onto the wall. I've seen it. It doesn't look like an antenna. It's just
Like someone threw a piece of paper against your wall and it's stuck like a bad party or something.
So here's a question for you. I'm sitting and I'm looking at my guitars. I have a Martin acoustic guitar and I have this it looks like a Stratocaster, but it's not guitar. And I have them out, even though I haven't played either of them in months and months and months. I just want to look cool by having them sitting out. So when people come over, I'm like, yeah, it's my guitar over there. It's been with me for a long time, you know, that kind of thing. But what do you think is like the best first song that someone can learn how to play guitar on?
Mary Had a Little Lamb.
What? I thought you were going to say like Stairway to Heaven or something.
No, like, do you mean like a kid or like?
No, if you're a anybody. Teenager. If you're a teenager and someone buys you an acoustic guitar and you sit down and you have to decide, all right, what song am I going to learn first? Yeah.
Hey You.
There you go.
Yeah. Nice callback.
I don't know. No, the first song I ever learned how to play on guitar was Nowhere Man by the Beatles.
Yeah. That's a good song. I'll tell you what mine was. Mine was a...
Stairway to Heaven.
Was it? No, it wasn't Stairway to Heaven. It was, oh gosh, the
Rebirth.
Creedence Clear. Oh God, no, the Creedence Clearwater Revival song, "Willie and the Po' Boys." That down by the corner, out on the street. I would sing it, but I'm stuffy, and this is a crappy microphone I'm using for this first one. I got to figure out how to get this mic to work.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. No, I would say a first good song. Probably a Dylan song, like Blowing in the Wind. That's an easy song.
Dylan songs are great. Yeah. Dylan songs.
Yeah, a few of them are pretty easy.
Yeah, Dylan songs, Beatles. I mean, it's usually just a few. All I know is like I think I know a total of 6 chords.
No.
And 2 of them I have to bar, so I don't even know if that counts because I could barely do that. So maybe I only know 4 chords.
Right. Cool.
But yeah, if you ever come over, my guitars are out, and basically I just like to talk shit. They're like, yeah, it's my guitar over there, playing it for years.
We will be there over the summer, man.
We're looking forward to that.
Yeah. Looking forward to it as well. The big Griswold trip to the West.
Yeah.
Where now, cities are more than 2 hours apart.
Well, I forgot that you've been out here before, that you spent time out here. I keep on forgetting that. But Lauren's never been out here, has she?
She was, yeah. She did a summer internship there.
Oh, okay.
And then I was there for a summer when I was stationed at Regis for a summer. Was at Regis College up on Federal and 50th.
Okay.
So, yeah. I loved it out there. I loved it out in Denver.
Oh, we have been so, I mean, we miss our friends back east. I mean, that's a given. Miss our family and stuff. But we have been so unbelievably happy out here that, you know, it's like, you know, the old saying is you can't run away from your problems or anything like that. But I just think, you know, something about Colorado is just rejuvenated us. I mean, there's really something about, you know, just getting up every morning and getting in your car and you're looking at mountains. I just cannot imagine not having, and we don't have a view of the mountains from our place, but when you make a left turn, a right turn, and then there they are right in front of you. And
yeah,
I can never get tired of that.
I want to make an editorial change. You could say, I never want to, no, what was it? No, oh, rats. Maybe I'll try to edit this. And I'm not telling you to say this. No, I'm saying for my own self, I was like, well, you can run away from your problems, but once you have a kid, it gets a hell of a lot harder. And you get married and you have a family. Yeah. No, I think probably half my life I was running away from problems, and then I got married.
Well, you did a lot of traveling. And I'll never forget when you were studying to be a priest, when you and a buddy of yours were gonna hitchhike from Atlanta down to Savannah, and I met you guys for breakfast before you were about to do that.
I was like,
you're nuts. What are you thinking? He's like, no, if God wants us to get to Savannah, we'll get to Savannah. I'm like, you're going to get hit by a car, man. Don't do it. I was like, I will drive you to Savannah. We'll get in my car. I will drive you guys to Savannah.
We came all the way down from Detroit. So we were by golly. Yeah. By the time we got to Atlanta, we're like, we're getting there. We'll walk there if we have to.
No, you guys were very adamant about it. So, you know, eventually I was like, fine, bye. And you guys went off.
Hey, man. Thanks again for it was thanks to generous people like you, man, that kept us fed along the way.
I just bought you breakfast. I was ready to drive you guys down to Savannah.
Luckily, I was able to hook up with a priest in Savannah, and he bought us drinks and took us to the beach. So it wasn't quite the poverty pilgrimage that we thought it was going to be. But
I forgot. Did you guys actually hitchhike from Atlanta to Savannah?
No, I forget how we got. We caught a ride to Macon, and then I was able to stay at a church in Macon for a night, and then we took a Greyhound from Macon to Savannah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
We made it to Macon.
What is the Simpsons reference? I want to go to Macon, Georgia. Like the episode where they all went to the Wig Sphere in Knoxville, Tennessee. And what was the kid's name? Nelson? He kept saying, I want to go to Macon, Georgia. That's what I was thinking when we went through Macon the whole time.
Ralph Wiggins.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, man. I got to find some Simpsons. Isn't there like a Simpsons channel now?
Well, yeah. Like, I think it's FX or one of those channels. They've been running just nonstop marathons of The Simpsons.
Yeah. I got to find that and just take a day off work and just veg to The Simpsons.
Yeah, that's what you should do. Father of two.
That'll stimulate my desire to go out and create social change in the world. Just sit around and watch The Simpsons all day.
There you go. with yeah. beer.
Exactly, man. All right, parenting tip, parenting advice, anything to help get through the life in this brave new world as a parent? What's your biggest biggest advice or biggest tip? I could use some right now.
It sounds cliche, but the best advice I could give a parent is before you explode, count to 10 and ask yourself, a couple of weeks ago, I took Maddie to school with me. I was tutoring at the writing center and I brought her with me and I set her up with my laptop so she could watch one of her shows and I could go over and do what I needed to do. And she came up to me just so innocently and she said, "Daddy, I spilled my orange juice." I'm like, "Okay, no problem." Walked over to the desk and she had spilled a whole jar of orange juice on my laptop computer.
Yeah.
And my laptop isn't the greatest computer in the world, but I mean, it's got my life. I mean, as a graduate student, it's got my life on it. And I saw this puddle of orange juice, you know, my computer in the middle of it. And I was ready to explode. And for the first time in my life, I counted to 10. And as I'm counting to 10, I was asking myself, like, you know, what's the price I'll pay by exploding at this little girl right now who did not do this on purpose, who is completely innocent. And I just let it go. And, you know, and that's like the best advice I could give to a parent. Count to 10 and just ask yourself, you know, what your explosion will do to your child. I mean, you know, when Maddie one day when she has kids and something like that happens, it's like I just want her to be able to walk away and just catch her breath and, you know, kind of remember what's important.
No, that's
good. The computer was fine. And even if it weren't, even if the computer weren't fine, even if it were fried, she's a little girl, you know, it was innocent and it's just not worth it. And I didn't learn that lesson until that accident happened. So,
That's good advice, man. My dad was a Marine sergeant, so I have to as well stop sometimes and just breathe.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's my parenting advice. Count to 10. I don't always do it. I'm not perfect at it, but I told Lane about it, my wife about it that night. I was like, I was pretty proud of myself. I was like, you know, had it been my father, it would have been would have been a homicide.
I know.
But that's my parenting advice.
All right, cool, man. Mine, I would probably say when they're not making noise, to just sit with them. Because I find that that's everything good. I'm doing is trying to – is everything I do is focused on the future. It's usually 10 seconds into the future, like you need to get outside. You got to get to school. You got to get your lunch. You got to do this. You got to do that. Don't forget to do this. And why – or the past. Like, why did you do this? Why did you do this? And the other day, Elliot, my 4-year-old, just climbed in the bed. I was just on my laptop typing in bed. It was like – time for bed, his own bedtime, and he just decided to come into the room, just kind of laid down next to me, and it was just quiet. There was no screaming from me or him, but it was nice. It was just, I don't know, just that, just to be in the moment and to remember, like, you know, you're not gonna have this moment. He's gonna be starting kindergarten and growing up and then start making noises like he's an adolescent when he's only 6. So
Well, that's the thing that I've whenever my daughter wants to snuggle, I'm open for business. I'm absolutely open for business. Right now, she has this thing where if I'm lying on the couch or whatever, she likes to climb on top of me and lay on top of me. Yeah. Like, even if there's like another chair completely open or another part of the couch that's completely there, she still would rather climb up on top of my back and lay down on top of me. And I'm like, fine, no problem. It was like when they're babies and you lay them on top of your chest so you can hear their breathing with yours.
Yeah.
That's just the greatest thing in the world.
I remember your invitation for snuggling when we're there in the summer and I get kicked off the air mattress. I'll be sure to take that tonight.
Yep. He's like, Tony, if you want to come upstairs and lie on my back and hear my breathing, you're more than welcome to.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
I actually have another tip for parents.
Yeah.
You got to buy an iPad. Every kid, and I know this sounds kind of snobbish and maybe kind of like upper middle class or whatever, but and it's not. It's like iPads are the greatest thing ever for long trips, especially for when you take your kid on a plane for the first time. iPad the thing. I mean, iPad is the greatest thing. You should every kid should have one. That's my thing.
Cool. There are some good, definitely some good learning games. Ollie's wanting to get some apps. When he broke his arm, my 7-year-old broke his arm, so I got him a tablet just to help him out because he was spending a lot of time laid up, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, we can, you know, they got some things you can do on it. So I got him like a little Samsung cheap tablet on Amazon. And it was, there's definitely some stuff out there. Like, you know, part of me was like, oh, but it's screen time and that's not good for kids. But there's definitely, it's going to be the world they're in. And there's some good learning stuff on it too. You know, it's like, it's engaging him and like, and even like the Minecraft game, like he's totally into Minecraft. It's like real surreal. It's very laid back and tranquil and peaceful and meditative almost. It's very.
Yeah. I think it's one thing. I think it's one thing if you give your child an iPad and load it up with cartoons and, you know, like SpongeBob or what is it? SpongeCake Bob or
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah.
So it's like that, SpongeBob CirclePants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, we just have the educational stuff on it and like some of her shows and everything. And the thing is that at her daycare, in each of the classrooms, they have these huge television size touchscreen things. Mm-hmm. So they do interactive learning. So you said it. I mean, this is the world that they live in.
Yeah.
And I think, have an iPad. iPads are great. I'm all for it. They have allowed my wife and I to actually talk to each other over dinner at times, which I know is horrible, but it's the only way she and I have been able to have dinner and talk many times.
Assuming that nobody has started to give us 1-star ratings and boycotting this already, maybe we can get Apple to sponsor us.
That would be nice.
That's right, folks. Go out and buy your iPad right now.
Yeah.
Cool, man. All right. Well, let's wrap up. How do you feel?
I feel good. This was a lot of fun.
Good.
I like this. I like this quite a bit. I'm going to – I think at times – wait, is this – are we
– We're still recording. We're still recording. Okay. But,
yeah. I think I could have been a little bit more prepared. No, this was a lot of fun. I'm definitely
I like the casual. If anything, this will be something when we're 60, we can go back and reminisce.
You know, I was thinking about something though. What's funny is that the last time you and I did a show together, we had to do it in a studio with a mixing board, with professional microphones, with a transmitter, with an amplifier.
You picked me up at 5:15 in the morning.
Yeah. And now, like 20 years later, we're using a phone and a computer, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts when you think about it.
I know. Well, 20
years
now
ago, when we did a show, we had to have a radio station.
And we got our URL, stopthator.com, and also the we'll get the Stop That or You'll Go Blind dancers.
Yeah.
And we can start going on the road.
Love it.